Now, your noontime check-in with today's business world and more. This is the Wintrust Business Lunch, sponsored by Wintrust, Chicago's bank, on 720 WGN.
Well, happy Monday, everybody. This is the Wintrust Business Lunch. Steve Bertrand out today. John Hansen here filling in and excited to do that. And we're going to get things started as you guys do every Monday. Jim Dahlke and Catherine Davis from Chicago Inno joining us. Guys, thanks so much for coming, even though Steve's not here again today.
Yeah, thanks for having
thanks
us
Thanks so much.
You know, most of the guests, as I told you, they usually cancel the moment they find out that Bertrand's not here, so...
We prefer him to not be there. Just kidding, Steve. Love you.
Yeah. So Chicago Inno, of course, you guys do some great work. So let's jump into some of the stories. I'm going to tease one, though, because I want people to text in. I tease this with Bill and Wendy. How many times does the average American look at their phone throughout the day? 312-981-7200. Text on in what your thoughts are. And we're going to do that one in just a little bit. But let's go ahead and start, Catherine, with Revolution backing $5 million Series A for a Chicago startup named Paro, or is it Paro? Do you know how to pronounce it? I think it's Paro. Paro. Okay. Yeah. What does Paro do?
So they're a startup. They connect businesses with freelance finance professionals. So people like bookkeepers, accountants, analysts, and they provide services remotely, like an hourly support on demand service.
So if you were looking for financial advice and you didn't want to maybe go to one of the big box shops, you can find maybe a better deal by using this app.
Yeah.
So think about them too. It's really more of a B2B. So they're working with companies. So like if a business needs a part-time accountant, they can connect with Paro to get this service. So the interesting thing too about Paro's investment here, getting $5 million, part of it was led by Revolution, which is a VC firm in DC.
Oh, I thought it was a brewery. When I saw Revolution, I'm like, they got that kind of money to give to businesses?
That would be funny.
That'd be great.
The Revolution Brewery was doing VC investment. Yeah, I would take that money. The interesting thing about Revolution, they're founded by Steve Case, the founder of AOL, and they're all about, or very largely about, funding startups outside of Silicon Valley.
Why? What's the advantage there for doing that? Because you imagine that, you know, people, startups in Silicon Valley, they kind of have built an infrastructure there.
Right. So Revolution has three different funds. One of the funds is called its Rise of the Rest Fund. And really, it's kind of a fund and also a movement in venture capital to go across the country and find startups really in America's heartland to invest. And these are the communities that really sort of need this investment anyway. I think what they see, what the Revolution folks see in the Rise of the Rest Fund is that venture capitalists are overlooking the Midwest. They're overlooking places in Indiana, in Michigan, in Illinois. And what they want to do is bring awareness and funding to some of the high-growth startups that are here in the middle of the country. And so Revolution is really focused on that.
I imagine Paro would be great for these freelance finance professionals who can get lost in the shuffle when you got all these big names. It's sometimes hard to find someone individually that might be able to do the job and save you a little bit of money.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. Yeah, and we're seeing this too. Chicago has another company called ShiftGig, which does something similar, but for kind of warehouse, retail, and other sort of on-demand work. So really, you're seeing a lot of these kind of quote-unquote gig economy startups popping up.
Okay, let's move on to Grubhub. This is a really cool story. They're committing $1 million to supporting restaurants that are run by women or have women in the kitchen. Catherine, this is really cool.
Yeah, so they just launched, it's a $1 million fund, and they are like incentivizing diners to eat and order food from restaurants that either have like a head chef that's a woman or owned by a woman. And they developed this whole map that outlines all of those kind of restaurants like throughout the entire country. So making it really easy for diners to find these kinds
of restaurants. So obviously restaurants have the incentive to let Grubhub know that they are one of these restaurants. Obviously it's advantageous for them. Where does that $1 million go? They're not incentivizing the consumer by giving them a discount, are they?
Well, so Grubhub is contributing $1 up to $1 million for every person that pledges to dine at a women-led restaurant, essentially.
So. First 100,000 is going to go to Women and Chef Restaurateurs, which is a national culinary organization in Virginia that helps fund scholarships for women in the culinary industry.
I was pretty shocked when I saw the numbers of how few restaurants in this country have women as the head chefs in them.
Yeah, less than 20%, which is pretty crazy.
It is crazy, especially when you consider, and boy, this is going to sound so many stereotypical alarms, but for so many years, a lot of women were the primary cooks in their mm-hmm. family. I imagine you have so many recipes that have been passed on. It's amazing that in the professional world, the number's so low.
It is kind of astonishing that the restaurant business is still the boys' club that it is. So, I mean, I think what Grubhub is trying to do is to shine a light on some of these great women-led restaurants and really say, hey, there's an incentive for folks here in the the city and across the country to commit to dining through this. And they're going to do the this campaign goes through the month of March.
I imagine it's not only the financial incentive that you know that if you commit to buy there that they will pass that money on, but you mentioned, Catherine, the app showing the map of where you can do it. Maybe this could be something that people, if they're really dedicated to this cause, they can start to check these items off the list and kind of go one by one. My good friends over at DNA Info, they shut down late last year. They're starting a new website called Block Club Chicago. And this is one of those stories that I'm never able to understand because they're using this blockchain technology. Catherine, in as layman's terms as you can, what the heck is going on here?
Okay, so they are partnering with a company called Civil. They're a New York-based startup. And what they've done is they've created a publishing platform that's built on blockchain. And what that means is, you know, the platform, none of the content can ever be deleted. So that's a really good thing for, you know, journalists who are ever worried about their work disappearing.
Yeah, well, DNA Info particularly, there was a little gap there where their information, all their stories were gone. So that's nice to know that no matter what, it'll always be there.
Exactly. And it's kind of built on a platform where readers will have to buy tokens to access content. And so, you know, they can pay for the content with Bitcoin, with other cryptocurrencies. And, you know, in hopes that, that those tokens will eventually gain more value over time and there'll be kind of a return on the investment.
Can you still just put down $5 a month in US dollars?
For sure. And so what the reader can get back in return is a token that's specific for the publication. So then they'll be issuing that token back to the reader. Then, like as Catherine said, you know, hopefully, I mean, this is kind of like the hope with cryptocurrency just generally, that the value will continue to go up. So it's kind of an off the wall sort of way to think about funding journalism. But when you think about it, there hasn't been a lot that's worked when it's come with funding news. And so why not try something kind of innovative and new? And you know, who knows if this cryptocurrency sort of blockchain initiative will take off with media companies. But I'm really curious to see and really impressed by their adoption of it.
That's a really mutually symbiotic relationship too. Block Club Chicago, coming from a big name like DNA Info, big in the local news scene, is going to be good for them to get more customers using the blockchain apparatus. But it's also great for Block Club Chicago because I imagine that the blockchain and Civil is taking care of the technology side of things.
Exactly. Yeah, it seems like kind of a match made in heaven in terms of that. So yeah, they're taking care of the publishing platform. DNA Info is going to, or the DNA Info folks are going to get down to doing obviously what they do best, right? Which is neighborhood reporting. So they don't have to worry as much about that side of things. So it seems like a great partnership.
Jim Dahlke and Catherine Davis, you guys are going to stick around from Chicago. Inno, how many times a day do we look at our phone? 847 says 111. Another 847 says 1,200 times. That's quite a high number. Someone says 2,000 times a day, even higher than that. We're going to get that number. And an interesting story about an app that's trying to help us curb our use of social media on our phones in just a little bit.
This is the Wintrust Business Lunch with Steve Bertrand on 720 WGN.
Steve Bertrand out today. John Hansen in for him here on the Wintrust Business Lunch. And we're chatting with Jim Dahlke and Catherine Davis from Chicago. You know, and guys, we've been teasing it long enough. How many times does the average American look at their phone per day? We've had a lot of texts. Someone just said 84 times a day. 630 says 448 times a day, which is a kind of a number I expected. So what is the actual number, Catherine?
46 times a day.
Doesn't that seem low?
It does seem low, but, you know, like we were talking about, think of those people who are checking their phones only one or two times a day.
Right.
Probably older users of smartphones.
Exactly. But it's probably like exponentially reversed for the age gap because the younger you are, I'm sure you are checking.
I probably check mine 200 times a day. So,
you know, one day we should all count it together and see what that number really is because I'd be amazed. And also, I don't think the 46 we were talking with, I was talking with Bill during the break. I don't think that counts when you check your time on your phone. Mm-hmm. I think they're actually talking about opening it up. But one app is hoping to help curb the number of times we open our phone to go to social media, right?
Yeah. So it's a Chicago-based startup called Pause App. And what they've done is they've designed an app that alerts users when their use of social media is getting to dangerously high levels and putting them at risk for anxiety or depression. I'm sure we've all heard of FOMO, mm-hmm. fear of missing out. You know, sometimes you're looking at Facebook and someone's having a better day than you are with their photos or whatever.
Everybody's always having a better day than you are digitally than in real life, by the way, to everyone out there that's not real life. But yes, continue.
Yeah. And so, you know, they're just trying to kind of cut down on that and help people reduce their, you know, overusage of social media.
So what this does, this app particularly, because there's apps out there, I believe, that do similar things, but actually limit your ability to do it, or you'd have to go through extra steps to log in. This one doesn't quite do that, right?
No, it just notifies you, doesn't completely block you from any of the apps, so you can still use them. And then the app resets every 24 hours.
Is the idea that if you're just made more aware of the pure number of times you're looking, that just seeing a little red, yellow, or green light is going to indicate to you, hey, maybe I should slow down a little bit more, putting on yourself to go, I need to curb this a bit?
My guess is that the people who would benefit most by this aren't going to download it.
Right.
My guess is that it's, you know, maybe, you know, parents kind of force their kids to download this app. Or, you know, maybe and schools are using, they're getting their kids to use phones a lot, whether it's in middle school or high school, maybe kind of forcing all these kids to download the app as well. So if you're going to use your phone for an assignment and they're going to have their phone out all day, I mean, knowing when they're like kind of approaching like too much time on Facebook, it could be a nice little warning. So my guess is that if you can kind of adopt this to kind of like broader organizations who might be able to give it to this to younger people, it might be more efficient.
How does an app like this make money? Because I think it's free, they were saying. It's just on Android right now. They're looking to expand it to iPhone. But that's my, I'm always curious on that end of things.
Well, So right now it looks like they're free, but like I said, like, you know, selling this to schools, right? So if schools are going to use this, they could use it, sell it to kind of bigger organizations like that.
I've got an idea. Someone can steal this if they want to use it. If you'd give me some of the money, that'd be great on the other end. But let's say you stayed in the green for a whole day. You stayed under. Maybe there's an incentive business like a Domino's or a Papa John's or any pizza place, really, for me, that put money into an account, like a reward sort of system based. Now that would get me going.
I love it. I love it. Yes. And then, yeah, I mean, schools the same way. You know, you could earn extra credit points for like staying off your phone. So, I mean, there's a lot can be used with this.
Do you want to start that app, Jim?
I love it. Let's do it.
Let's go do that. Okay. We've talked, you guys have talked about this on the show before, the Hyperloop. And I remember listening just, it was 2 weeks ago where you guys talked about Chicago to Cleveland. One of the other earlier plans was Chicago, Columbus, Pittsburgh, and Catherine. That plan has taken another step forward, right?
Yep. So that plan, they just announced that they are launching a feasibility study. It's going to cost about $2.5 million. And they're just going to be looking at like how realistic is it to build this. It's designed to get passengers to Columbus in under 30 minutes and then from Columbus to Pittsburgh in less than 20 minutes.
That's crazy. That's quicker than obviously flying, especially when you got to go through the, you know, the security stuff like that. Jim, you were saying that from Geneva to Chicago, that's a longer drive and commute than this would be. My question is like when I think about it, I'm like, why Chicago to Columbus then to Pittsburgh? They don't seem like areas that need to be linked, but you shed a little light on this.
Right. So the folks in Columbus, the community developers down there, are really the ones spearheading this. So they want to be able to connect Columbus to some of these other larger metro areas. Actually, there's a lot of smart city tech happening in Columbus. There's a great little startup community happening there. And so they are very forward thinking when it comes to new technology. So it's not surprising that they are kind of spearheading this. And it's not surprising, too, that they would want to kind of connect their business communities to both Chicago and Pittsburgh. So there's a lot of commuter implications for this. There's a lot of cargo implications for this. So we're still, like we've kind of mentioned before on this program, we are a long way before any of this becomes a reality.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's interesting to see the initial steps taking place in Chicago kind of being ground zero for two major Hyperloop projects.
When you say long way, I mean, you're talking decades, right?
I don't know that we're actually that. If we kind of move at the pace that it's moving, I don't think that it's going to take decades.
Okay.
What it's going to have to do is convince kind of like, I don't think the Hyperloop has gotten into the mainstream quite yet. I don't think people have really wrapped their head around like, how many people really want to go 700 miles an hour in a pod underground? You know what I mean? Because I think a lot of people a lot of people are afraid of flying, right? So now we got to get a lot of people over this hurdle of, is this a safe thing to do? And so, you know, it's one thing to test, like, can we build it? It's another thing of, can we do it safely and convince people to do it?
Right, but when you're talking about gigantic infrastructure changes, it took a long time to convince people to go 600 miles an hour in an aluminum tube, 30,000 feet in the air, but eventually it's done. Catherine and Jim, thank you guys so much for joining us. Where can people find out more information?
Check us out at chicagono.com, and from there you can sign up for The Beat, which is our daily email newsletter.
That's great stuff. Catherine, thanks so much.
Yeah,
and
thanks,
you had fun in Mexico?
I did have fun.
Sorry, welcome back to reality.
Now, your noontime check-in with today's business world and more. This is the Wintrust Business Lunch, sponsored by Wintrust, Chicago's bank, on 720 WGN.
John Hanson in for Steve Bertrand here on the Wintrust Business Lunch. So happy to be joined by Tim Roach, CEO of Lender, and Tim, well, I should say Coach Roach, right? Coach? Who are you coaching?
Started coaching my son's floor hockey. We won 4-2 and 5-3 on Friday and Saturday.
Not that anyone's keeping score.
Right, exactly.
So tell us a little bit about Lender for those that don't know.
Yeah, Lender is a Chicago-based specialty finance company. We do business finance, working capital, and traditional factoring.
What makes your business stand out from maybe other business lenders out there?
I think some of the basic things for us is as we've said before, is not only trying to do the right thing for our clients, but as well as our team, always putting our clients ahead of us in the regards of getting them, you know, better terms, flexible working capital, ease in which they can, you know, get additional capital when they need it, pizza oven goes out, whatever it may be. We're really trying to create a solution for our clients.
And you mentioned the pizza oven going out. I think that's something that people can relate to. A lot of small businesses that need capital quickly, they need it fast to be able to even run their business, and you guys are often there for them.
Yeah, I'm glad to say our speed in which we have the ability to give our clients access to capital. When I started this company in 2011, it was days, and now we're in the hours.
Wow.
So it's pretty exciting.
How are you able to do that? Because I imagine you don't just look at one score and analyze it from that standpoint. You look a little bit more comprehensively.
Yeah, we have a lender matrix. It gives everybody a score. We don't just look at the credit. We look at everything else, their cash flow, their business, the operators, our algorithms, everything we do. We still have the human touch on it. So we can do a turnaround in 2 hours or less. And if we have everything, we can fund that person the same day, or usually it's 48 hours.
How much money are we talking for a small business that they're looking? I mean, minimum, maximum, sort of range?
Our range is about $7,500 in the minimum, and we'll go up to $500,000.
Oh, wow. So yeah. And it really covers a lot of different
big range for a lot of different small to mid-sized businesses.
That's great. We were talking during the break. You're accepted to Forbes Financial Council, and I was saying, what a noteworthy name that is. It must be a fun project to start working on.
That's awesome. I was very honored to be asked to be part of that council, and it's starting to get exciting when you start writing articles and get some your name out there and start looking at different projects, and being part of the Forbes Council and another 400 other business owners is awesome.
And you seem to have a real passion for business, for lending. It's certainly something that's a niche thing that, you know, you really got to be into it. Is it because you get to see results from your clients and that they're happy and that they're able to make more money? Just it's positive for everyone.
It is. I was a small business owner. I mean, I think I talked to this with Steve last time I was on here. I started a car wash and a detail center 25 years, and trying to get extra capital and working capital at the time, there wasn't such a thing. And so you do the friends and family, and fast forward 25 years later, and I'm in a position to be able to help small business owners. I've struggled many, many times in business and figuring out where you're going to get additional capital. So helping that small business owner, providing them access to capital in real time is important to us, and you see the results by helping these small business owners.
So my car's parked in back. I haven't washed it in about 4 months. I can't think of the last time I vacuumed it. How much is that going to cost me? You mind helping me out after this interview?
That's cheap. $12.
Well, that's a pretty good deal. Let's talk about the Lender Business Series Breakfast. It's being held March 16th at the Westtown Innovation Center in the River at West neighborhood. Talk about what people are going to be can expect from
so
that.
So we've been talking about Lender Business Series for quite some time, and we wanted to roll it out in the first quarter of 2018. And the idea behind it was getting the community of small business owners, entrepreneurs over and starting to have good discussions. Our kind of is educate, connect, and inspire. And we want to basically, we have a really good forum and a great panel that's going to be there on the 16th from 7:30 to 10:30. But we're going to basically cover, you know, I call it the business 101, the basic blocking and tackling, understanding what your 1 year budget should be, your 1 year plan, your 5 year plan. We're going to have a great tax accountant from Plant Moran that will kind of talk you through the 18 tax implications on what we should be looking for. Our VP of finance will be there, understanding the IRS. There's just a lot of things that I think small business owners can do a little bit better, can have ask some really great questions, can look at what they need to do to ensure their success. And that's what we're there for.
Well, as a former small business owner yourself, I imagine that there's no better education than just talking with other people who have gone through similar things and just learning from them. So getting everyone in the same room, it's not just inspiring for new ideas, which it can be, of course, but this is going to help small businesses with their bottom lines.
I sure hope so. It's helped us. I mean, I've spent a lot of time on you know, budgeting, cash flow analysis, really looking at what makes your business tick, if you will, and understanding how you get over the hump when you need working capital, if you will, or how to budget for something that's going to be happening in the summer from your patio, making sure that the profits you're using, your retained earnings, are redeployed the correct way. There's a lot of things you can do, especially with the new tax laws, that can help a small business be that much more successful.
We got a lot of small business owners out there listening, or people that know small business owners. Where can people find out more information about what's going on March 16th and also what everything that you do at Lender?
So you can go to lender.online or lender.co, L-E-N-D-R. The Lender's Business Series is, again, on March 16th. You can go to the website. You can register. You have to register by March 10th.
Okay.
So that'll be very helpful for us. We're expecting a great crowd. And, yeah, just come out, and we would love to talk with you. We'd love to educate. We'd love to learn ourselves. So we're excited about it. This will be a quarterly event going forward as well. And the goal is ultimately we'll start going to other cities as well.
You mentioned learning yourself. I imagine that getting instant feedback, getting people around a round table, you're able to learn better what needs are for certain businesses, especially as things continue to change. Social media networks continue to change, how people advertise. That must give you a lot of insight as well.
Great insight. And we'll have a digital expert that'll be at the Lender Business Series to kind of talk about that. That's an area that I really like learning about, because it's not my expertise, is digital marketing or that type of marketing campaign. So it's been very exciting to see how that's done. I can't say I fully understand it all the way yet, but I'm learning.
Yeah, you'll learn from the other people.
Absolutely.
There.
And so, yeah, there's a lot of things that, you know, you never stop learning, right? That's one of the things that at our company we believe in, is you never stop learning and always trying to make things better, help our forward business owners, you know, help pay it forward, if you will. That's something I really do believe in. So I think this Lender Business Series will have a lot of legs for a long time to come on what we're trying to do for the community. And hopefully throughout the United States, we can start going to cities in 19 and 20. Would be an awesome long-term plan.
And Coach Roach, when's the next game? What's the game plan?
We have a game 5:45 on Friday. The game plan is that the little flu bug's been going around, so hopefully all the 5 and 4, 5 and 6 year olds are going to be healthy, and then just really good defense and put the puck in the net.
Do you put them to work pretty good there?
We have fun. It's fun watching 5 and 6 year olds play around with the hockey puck and move it. But it's great. It's fun to see your kids, you know, playing sports.
That's great stuff.
I love it.
That's really fun. Tim, thanks so much for joining us here.
Glad to be here. Thank you.
Coach Tim Roach, the CEO of Lender. Visit Lender at lendr.co or give him a call at 888-887-2812. Plenty more Wintrust Business Lunch coming up after this.
This is the Wintrust Business Minute.
Got a minute? Good. Because I've got the Wintrust Minute, sharing the news and asking questions for small business owners. Brick and mortar stores have been faced with a test in recent years, but would you know, Chicago-based Ulta seems to have found the answers. However, a flurry of reputation scandals are making consumers rethink their commitment to the beauty company. And Cranes is reporting that this is a pivotal moment for the company's CEO, Mary Dillon. Just remember, reputation is everything. And the reputation of River North Sports Authority building is no longer. A new co-working company will be taking over. Amsterdam-based Spaces is filling the entire 8-story building with co-working offices. And if you've never heard of these kind of offices, start reading some more, because they're catching on. Spaces is one of the newest additions to the Chicago co-working community, with other familiar ones such as Level Office and the international phenom WeWork. Just another example of Chicago making a name for ourselves on the global scale. Tune in tomorrow for all of your up-to-date business news on WGN Radio.
This is the Wintrust Business Lunch with Steve Bertrand on 720 WGN.
Hello, Steve. Today, John Hansen in for Steve Bertrand here on the Wintrust Business Lunch. Okay, so last year, in the last 2 years, I've been lucky. I got to go travel to Iceland. It was one of the most exciting things I got to do. Started looking at hotel rates, was a little turned off by some of the high rates, the small rooms, and someone said, just Airbnb it. And I looked on Airbnb, this app, obviously, that helps you find places to stay on vacation, and I could not have been happier with the experience. When I went to find a lake house in Wisconsin for me and the family to go look, I was able to find two great ones in Wisconsin and Minnesota. Made a great, great vacation. As you can see, I'm a big fan of Airbnb, but it doesn't mean it's without its complications. So here to walk us through all that, Ben Bryant, the public relations there at Airbnb. Ben, thanks so much for joining us here on 720 WGN.
Thanks so much for having me on.
So I imagine you have a lot of success stories like the ones I've told. People kind of taking a shot in the dark, not knowing exactly what they're going to get from Airbnb, and they find good luck. For those that are listening that may not know exactly how it all works, why don't you just remind people exactly what it is that Airbnb does?
Sure. So what Airbnb does is connects people, whether they have an extra room in their home or a full home when they're on vacation or a traditional vacation rental. That's what you do. Connects them with consumers who are looking for, you know, perhaps a different type of experience. So our company is 10 years old. Obviously, the vacation rental market has been around for much longer. But what Airbnb has done is sort of ushered in the rise of home sharing and this iteration of the sharing economy, made it possible for, you know, regular people, whether it's you or me or seniors with an extra home, empty nesters, to be able to take full economic advantage by renting it out to consumers for whatever price they want to value that room or home at.
What do you say to pushback from hotels who say that you're stealing their business and running them out of business?
Well, the data just doesn't square with that. Don't listen to me. Just look at the data, whether it's within the city of Chicago, the state of Illinois, more broadly throughout the United States. Hotels have never been doing better, whether it's by occupancy rates, revenue. Specifically in the state of Illinois, hotel revenue was up 4% last year, and that's as Airbnb continues to grow, as the home sharing market continues to grow. So the data really doesn't bear that out. And what we find is that guests on our platform, they're looking for a different type of experience. They want to get off the beaten path. Maybe they don't want to be confined to, you know, in Chicago, maybe the Loop. We all love the Loop, right? But not everyone can afford that. Not everyone wants to be in the central business district. Some want to be, you know, in a regular neighborhood, experiencing Chicago like we who live in those neighborhoods get to, or more rural areas of the state. And again, some people just flat out can't afford hotel prices, because Airbnb, by and large, does tend to be much more affordable for middle class folks. So, that suggests to us that we're not taking a piece of the hotel's pie. We're making the pie bigger for everybody.
What you mentioned, tax revenue, is how much does the state collect here in Illinois?
Well, last year we were able to remit $9.3 million to the state of Illinois, and this is a result of something we started to do a few years ago, because, again, you know, Airbnb has ushered in the rise of regular folks being able to take economic advantage of their homes. There are many taxes that are associated with that, taxes that were designed with hotels in mind, hotels with large teams of accountants and CPAs. So if you're hosting in the city of Chicago, there are three different taxes, one for Chicago, one for the county, and one for the state of Illinois, that apply, that you're remitting at different times to different entities in different ways. It is very complex. And that's even if you know that the taxes exist. So what we started doing was partnering with local governments, not just in Illinois, but throughout the country, on tax agreements that allow Airbnb to collect those taxes on behalf of the host and remit them directly to the local governments. So that makes the process easy for our host. They don't have to worry about it, and delivers a whole lot of new revenue for whomever that local government is. So new revenue without having to raise taxes, that is a pretty great thing,
yeah.
Especially for a cash-strapped state like ours. So for the state of Illinois, that meant $9.3 million in revenue that otherwise they might not have received, because otherwise the responsibility is on these hosts who may not know that the taxes exist or know how to do it.
Ben, I got a question for you, and we're going to have to do this one pretty quickly, but I just bought a place and a condo for the first time, and while I was searching all sorts of condos across Chicago, they were quick to let me know that in their new rules and regulations, they had been updated to let me know that they would not allow me to rent out an Airbnb for my either a room or for my entire place if I were to move or need to rent it out. How are you guys dealing with that? Are you looking at giant losses in inventory of being able to rent places out? How are you guys trying to combat that to convince associations that it's okay to let people rent it out? Where do you see that going in the next year or two?
Yeah, that's something we see throughout Illinois, right? It's still such a new concept, and sometimes you see HOAs that are afraid of trying new things. Well, one program that we've started that has been highly successful that we hope to bring to Chicago as much as possible is what we call the Friendly Buildings Program. So HOAs, landlords will say, well, why should I allow home sharing? What's in it for me? Well, this program says, here's what's in it for you. If you allow it, and change your bylaws, we'll give you a cut of the profit. So everyone's benefiting, not just the renter, but also the landlord and Airbnb as well, because, you know, we want to allow as many people as possible to be able to share their homes. So that's a program that we want to introduce to as many landlords and HOAs as possible, because it it makes it more than a win-win. Now it's a win-win-win.
Ben, I'll give you my my new homeowners association, because I live near Wrigley, and I'd like to, if they make the World Series again, the Cubbies, be able to rent that out for a few days. I'll go stay at my parents' for a week and rent those out. But Ben from Airbnb, thanks so much for your time.
I appreciate it. Thank you.